Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, Reel 7.
Mr. Laverick, Reel 7. We were talking about your political activities once you'd moved back to Newcastle. What other campaigns were you involved in?
Well, we run an unemployed, a big unemployed campaign, and we run this in conjunction with the Trades Council. And we still go down to employment exchanges and various places and picket and get the people to come in to try and do something for the unemployed. The response was excellent as far as Newcastle went. We had a big unemployed market in Newcastle there, a big area where they used to come in for. And we had the unemployment exchanges where we had plenty of room for to go and really get working. Then, of course, election times came along and we used to go along then and assist the Labour candidates. And that's how I got really interested in the Labour movement. I had always been interested in politics, but I had been very, very left-wing. Met certain people on the way through that I changed, not considerably. I'm still a Marxist. I still contend I'm a Marxist. But I saw their points of view. I could see that the different people that I spoke to brought me in, and I saw their points of view. Of course, that had started off when I was in the South with Webb and these people. And I was beginning to see other points of view, and I was beginning to support the centre role. Well, it wasn't a centre. There was no centre role then. It was a direct Tory Labour campaign, Tory socialist campaign. We weren't Labour, we were socialists. We were really socialists. It wasn't a dirty word then. Socialism wasn't a dirty word in those days. And we supported the Labour campaign. When the elections came around, we really got onto it and got cracking around all houses and whatnot and gave them all the assistance we possibly could, as well as going down to various meetings that we had in Newcastle at the big market. Then you had a speakers forum. In the big market at Newcastle in those days, you could go and you could get onto the platform the same as they do in Hyde Park, and you could voice your approach to the people. That's disappeared now. You can't do it now. And we also had, at the time of the Hoppins, which is the race week in Newcastle, which is just now, just happening now, the race week in Newcastle. Well, the Sunday that the Hoppins came onto the moor, what we termed the Hoppins, came onto the moor, you could go across there and you could take a stool and get on your stool and you were allowed to preach politics there. And the various parties used to go across there and get on the platforms and give their views. And we used to go up and we used to first of all start at the Liberal platform. The Liberals were then trying to come forward. And we used to start there, half a dozen of us, all putting questions from various angles, trying to confuse the speaker, get him away on a different tack. This was the idea always when you went to heckle at meetings, was to take him away from his argument and bring him onto yours. And we used to heckle from various parts of the crowd. And then we used to move on from there to the Conservatives and start the campaign amongst the Conservative people. And always remember then it was a question of privilege. The privileges that they got that we couldn't participate in, private education and all this, that and the other, and how the establishment worked against the worker all the time, the worker that got him into this poverty, into the poverty belt, and once he was in, he stopped there. It was very, very hard for a working man in the 30s to get into employment if he was out of work, and B, get into a different structure of employment if he'd lost his job and if the job had disappeared. There was no such thing as training the way there is these days for the various people that are unemployed. They had what they called training camps, which we actually termed labour camps in the early 30s, the labour camps. And that's where we got the big dispersal of populations. We got all the people coming, the unemployed from Wales being sent down in London and these places. Unemployment from the north sent down to these areas. Unemployment from Scotland sent down into the training camps, what they call the training camps. And of course I was down there when these people had been sent down and got mixing with them here in the various different points of view. And as I say, I was always interested in the political side, and that made my life in the 30s, was the politics. I was interested in the politics. I had joined the territorials.
When did you join?
I must have joined in about the 1933 or 34, I think it must have been. It must have been 34, because it was after we'd had Ethiopia and the breaking of the Versailles Treaty by them and nothing done about it, and then Germany moving into the Rhine. So it must have been around the 34 area. That
I thought you were still in Watford then. Wouldn't it be 36 you came back?
No, I came back before. I came back 34, I think I came back 34. Must have been. It's a bit vague now, but I'm sure it was before 36, because 36 was the another move forward in my life. That's when I met my wife then. She worked at Morpeth.
So how did you come to join the Territorials? What made you want to join the Territorials?
Because we saw the... few of us had seen, politically, the move to the right, the fascists, and we also saw that our government was moving to the right. We had a very strong right-wing section, Lord Halifax and all these people, their lives. We could read their books and see which they were things were good. They were actually friends of Hitler's at the time that Hitler was in power. And we seen the way things were going, and we said, right, we are going to be ready for when the battle comes. We're going to be ready for it. But we still actually thought that we were working towards a time when revolution in this country would bring the workers against the establishment, and we'd be needed then. We were really, you know, in mind, and in the mind, we actually thought that the system could only be changed by revolution, and that we're going to be prepared when the time came and the workers had to revolt to find their place in society. The Scotchmen, certain Scottish MPs, had already been jailed for what they termed was causing a revolution up in Scotland during a strike up there. They had them in jail for the riotous attitudes and afraid they were going to start a revolution. So we really thought that when we joined the Territorials. But once we got into the Terriers...
Where did you go to join them then?
Gosforth. Gosforth.
And Gosforth, who were you Drake. Joining?
I joined the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, the 5th Battalion, Royal Northumberland Fusiliers.
And their drill hall was at...?
At West Avenue, Gosforth. And we joined the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers there and went in. And different chaps, we had a good crowd, good mixture in the Fusiliers. And we had a very, very good officer there, regular. But he was in charge of the whole of the unit, 5th, 6th and 7th. He was the adjutant in charge of the 5th, 6th and 7th. And we went in, we had this attitude of our unit was better than any other that was in the army. We were going to be the best. We were going to be the best unit in the army. Now, a few of us were real sportsmen. I was a boxer. There were two or three more there that were amateur boxers. And we got started in sporting career through the Territorials. We got their organisation, the 5th Battalion, were noted then for the sporting activities that they'd done. We used to clear the deck when it came to when we had our couvertures, and we had the inter-unit sports and such like against the DLI and these. We used to clear the decks in cross-country, boxing, everything. And we had a real good crowd at Gosforth. The 5th Battalion were an excellent crowd.
So what night was your drill night?
The drill nights were a Wednesday night. We used to go up there on a Wednesday night.
And what was your training like?
Changed to a Thursday night. Machine gun was I thought was a great gun, the Lewis machine gun. And I was very, very fortunate that the sergeant major in charge of the drill hall, he had machine gun on the premises. He had been an instructor with the machine gun in his unit, and I got under his wing straight away. And in a very, very short time, I was a qualified Lewis gun instructor. I never had a one stripe. I got my two stripes. They made me up to a two stripe, a corporal. It was a corporal in the infantry, you see. And I was made up to the corporal and put in charge of a machine gun squad at the drill hall.
What did you like about the Lewis gun?
Well, the rapid fire, the easy, it was so easy for taking the bits in assembly, and when it had a blockage, how you could quickly get shot of the blockage and put it back into action again. It was a very simple gun to use. It could be used from a tripod, it could be used from legs, ground level legs, and it was a beautiful gun for usage. I think it was 47 rounds that you had in your round magazine on the top, and I think it was 47 rounds you put in, so you had 47 opportunities of, you know what I mean, defending yourself or attacking. You had 47 chances on one, and then it was a question of speed of change of magazine, and that was what we...
How many were there in the team?
There were four in the team.
And what did each one do?
There was the magazine loader. There was the number two who lay beside you, who was the firer, and he was responsible for taking the magazine, putting on the bus. There was the number four who was responsible for bringing ammunition up the time you were firing. It was such a rapid machine fire in action that you required the four. You see, you required the one behind the gun to fire, the two to take a magazine off and put a full magazine straight on, the three for to ensure that the magazines were being filled, and the fourth one to bring ammunition up for to fill the magazines with. So you were once the gun was firing, we found it on the range. We used to go onto the range at Ponteland, actually, Ponteland firing range. Once you went onto the range at Ponteland, we used to have weekends there, actually, weekends at the firing range. And once you got the machine gun in action there, it was very, very essential that each man knew exactly what he was doing. Because the firing was so rapid, to keep up the constant fire, each man had to know his job.
And you were a number one?
I was the number one in charge of the...
Were you an accurate shot then?
I was reckoned to be very good. I was never good enough for the sniper, what they call it, with a rifle.
What about the rest of your training? I presume before you went on to the Lewis gun, you'd had basic training as well.
We should do the drill. We should do foot drills, marching. Rifle drill. We also used to use the rifle up at the range. We used to have competitions up at the range, up at the Ponteland range, rifle competitions, shooting at the targets and seeing how we're best and whatnot. And you had to get your grades, you had to get your passes on the various things that you were on. We also had an anti-tank gun that we used to...
Would that be the boys?
The boys. We had the boys' anti-tank gun. You could fire it from one man, two men, one on his shoulder and the other one behind as you were travelling. That was the boys' anti-tank gun. We had that, and we used to use that up on the range, on the metal targets for to knock them out the ground. And that was the boys. We had the boys' anti-tank gun. But the drills, you had to reach a certain standard in drill also. You had to reach a standard in drill. And then, of course, there was the sporting activities. That you also got, you got various tests in. And in these tests, you were tested for running. You were tested for jumps. You were tested for strength. And then you got the card telling you that you had passed the various fitness tests for the unit, for the full unit.
And how did you take to the discipline? I mean, you were a committed soldier. Did you find the discipline any problem?
Found it very, very easy. Discipline was very, very easy. I got on well I must have got on very well with the people that I was taking, because I found the discipline very, very easy indeed. And I had no difficulty in the discipline from the top, because it was like a barrack room when you went up there and up to the drill hall, it was like being in a just like being in the barrack room, which I had later gone into when war broke out. The conversation where you had your good officers, you had your bad officers, you had your good men, you had your bad men. And we could distinguish between them straight away. You could distinguish between
them. What was a good officer for you then?
My adjutant, I reckon, was an excellent officer.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, Kingsley Foster. The adjutant was called Kingsley Foster.
And what was so good about him?
He was fair. He was very, very fair. He was, when you went, you see, we were a unit. We were an ordinary unit where you got up to misdemeanours the same as everyone else. But when anything happened and you went in front of Kingsley Foster, he dealt with it himself. The lieutenants used to take you up to Kingsley. Kingsley sat in the chair. Everything was settled there. It wasn't like when we went into the service, later into the war, and your lower officers took you up and you moved up in steps to the captain, to the adjutant, to the move through from one to the other. No, he was an excellent chap, and he was also a sporting chap. He was great on sport.
So that was a good officer. What would a bad officer be like?
Well, we had bad ones there that came, and they actually thought that you were a stage below them. It was this class distinction. They had that pip, and that pip gave them authority they should never have had. That's what we considered a bad officer. The one that had the pip that should never have had the authority. Some of them came straight from the... we had one came straight from Sandhurst. A fellow called Scott came straight from Sandhurst. And he went to Sandhurst from his public school cadet corps. And I always remember him coming in. He's shouting, he was always shouting, he was always wanting you on parade, he was always wanting you doing this, that and the other. Never anything satisfactory. And it wasn't until the war broke out and I actually got into service that I realised that some of these officers, the only thing they knew was the book that they were brought up with. And if anything deviated from the book, they were lost. They were lost. This Scott was a person like that. He was never satisfied. When you went on couverture and you were putting your marquees and things up, he used to be there. And he always had a... You see, we were used at couverture. We were always on the forward party. And when you went to couverture, the forward
party... That was once a year. Was that the summer camp?
Once a year, summer camp, a month every year. And when we went there, we used to always be what we call forward party, because we used to put up the marquees and tents and things, you see. And unfortunately, this chap was sent to us. We had been doing the job for 3 or 4 years before he came. We knew exactly all the shortcuts and everything that had to be done, you see. We knew exactly where we had to put the tent pegs in just right before we even started putting the marquee up. But he came around and, no, that was wrong. This was wrong. That was wrong. This was wrong. Everything, never anything right. He had to be shown his authority all the time. We used to ignore them at the finish and just put the things up the way we had always put them up and get on with it. But couverture I liked. We always done our couverture at the same place as the DLI, Downright Infantry. And
where was that?
We'd done one with the Medanic and then we'd done two at Marsk. Two couvertures at Marsk with them, with the DLI. And We had fun. We had quite a bit of fun because they knew there was going to be always bits of bother where the DLI and the Northumberland Fusiliers used to be. And of course, we had a very good boxing team. George Brown and these lads, very good boxing team. And this is where the adjutant always scored with me. He used to come along and he said, just so-and-so, 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 so-and-so. There's a do-on down in Redcar tonight. Mask was outside of Redcar. There's a big do-on down there. Now, the Durham Light Infantry and the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers will all be there. Now, I want your people to go in different parts. Don't interpose on them. Let them enjoy themselves. But make sure that there's no trouble. Stop it immediately. And, of course, we used to go down, put a red, what they call it, on our caps, so we could be seen, go down, and you were sort of chuckered out if anything happened. Used to just go up and out with them. And we had these bits of trouble and it just be settled on the spot. go back. You used to make your reports. No one arrested, no. That's what I want to say. We don't want any arrests if we can avoid it. We want to keep in with the town. Always keep in with these people. And we went to York one time. The same thing happened there. We used to have our patrols out. And he always used to tell us, no, you know how to deal with things. Deal with them as the police would deal with them. And don't have to have any arrests if it can be possibly avoided. He was this sort of chap. He was a real good chap, was Kingsley Foster. And
What other things would you do on Coverture? I mean, what were you doing?
Sport was... on Coverture, your night manoeuvres were the big thing. Because we were infantry, you see. We were infantry. The night manoeuvres were the big thing. And it was always the DLI would be either the attacking force and we would be the holding force, or we would be the attacking force and the DLI would be the holding force. And you had your people going around, the officers going around with the red bands around their hats, telling you if you'd been hit, if you were dead, or this, that and the other. And you got out on the hills at Mosque and you really enjoyed it. Sands, there was this side, there was this sands, there was the hills at the back, and we really enjoyed it. And we used to score, we used to always score, because, as I told you before, we had a very good cross-country team. And this cross-country team, we used to take them out for training through the hills. So we knew the hills like the back of our hands. So when the manoeuvres were in the hills, and we took our sections out, we knew exactly where we were going and where we could hide, where we could expect the other side coming in from. And we had fun. And then, of course, plus that, during the day, your bands, you were lined up with your bands and you went out for your 6 mile marches. And each time you came to a village or to a town, the bands used to strike up and play the military tunes, march you right through and such like. And it used to feel good. You used to feel good. And another thing, you're being paid for a holiday. Holidays were things that we hadn't really been used to, but now we were getting holidays. And of course, mine, our family life had changed during the 30s. My own family, their lives had changed during the 30s, because my father, who had been blacklisted from the mines, had got a job in the shipyards, and had a brother had joined the Navy, a brother had joined the Army. The one that joined the Army in 1938 was the crack shot at Bisley. I still have his, what they call it here yet, where he had a life. It gave him the life, the opportunity for the rest of his life to go to Bisley to shoot in the individual championship. I've still got that yet. But things had changed, because one in the Navy, one in the Army, both making payments to the folks at home. I was working. I was away from home at this time, but I was working. Sisters were working. And we were established now as well above the Pittman family that we'd been normally. You see, we had money to spend.
What about, I mean, getting back to the thing, how did you get on with the other NCOs and the ones more, you were a corporal, more senior than yourself?
The senior NCOs, well, Chalky White and these people, we got on with them, and Taylor and these people. But when war broke out...
I mean before the war, really.
Before the war, yeah. Got on very well with them. And it was a peculiar thing, because, you see, the Gosforth, I would be about them. Yes, I was. The highest NCO at Gosforth is a corporal. The sergeants came from the different areas, one from Walker and from Wall's End. You see, we were only a unit of the 5th Battalion. The rest were at Walker and at Wall's End. And the sergeants and the sergeant major and the quartermasters were from their units. They weren't from ours. We had a regular sergeant major in charge of drill hall, Martin. He was in charge of the drill. He was paid. He was the regular in charge of the drill hall. But the corporal was we were the highest. The sergeants came over from another unit, you see. They were in our unit, but they were in a different company. The sergeants were in a different company.
Now, what about your politics? Did you talk any politics?
Oh, yes. All the time you were talking politics.
Even in the territorials?
In the territorials. The politics then were really establishment that you were up against, the establishment you were up against. Oh, yes, you even talked in the territorials. We You see a lot of lads were unemployed and they got money in their hands when they went on couverture. They actually had money in their hands and they used to tell you straight. Isn't it amazing? No money when you're unemployed till you come into the couverture in Norway handy. We can use money. Oh yes, we talked a lot about politics. We had our arguments with the various people. And of course, we, outside in the Gosforth area, the majority were miners that were in the unit. And yet, in the other two parts, Walker and Moyles End, there were shipyard workers and others that were other types of workers, you see. We were still a different unit, really, to what they were, unemployed and miners we were. But we fitted in well with them, and the sergeants we got on very well with, although we didn't see all that much of them on parades till we actually went to couverture. When we went to couverture, that's when we really got amongst the sergeants and such like. You didn't see much of them there because the work was always put on the corporals. Corporals and lance corporals done all the work at camp. Your sergeant, you were in charge of your barrack rooms. The only time you saw your sergeants when there were inspections and such like. And this is when you also found your good officers and your bad officers. Found out your good officers and bad officers.
Now, what about the Northumberland Fusiliers? We're going into a period of change, weren't they? They'd been in infantry, really.
Big change taken part, and we hadn't been told about it. This was a peculiar thing that we'd heard there was going to be change, and we'd heard that we were going to be made into a mechanised unit. This is what we'd heard. That
just before the war, or what year would this be about?
That would be 1937. The talk started in 1937. We were going to be mechanised units, and nothing official, but we were going to be everything. We were going to be tank corps 1 minute, and next time you went across, no, we weren't going to be tank corps, we were going to be gunnery. We were going to have guns, and then no, we were going to be a scouting unit. We were mechanised as a scouting unit. And we never knew until 1938 that what we were going to be. And then the official documents were sent out. We were all pulled up on couverture. We were all put on parade, and then we were told. The 7th Battalion were... What were the 7th Battalion again? The 6th Battalion were going into tanks. The 7th Battalion were going to be a mechanised unit. But our battalion were going to be a searchlight battalion. And of course, this, to an infantryman, was dreadful. Oh, it was dreadful to an infantryman to think that he was going to be put onto a searchlight unit. What could you do with a searchlight? But we were pacified. They told us, well, that's okay. You've got nothing to worry about. Your searchlights are going to be very essential. You're going to be under fire. You'll have your Lowe's guns. You'll have your rifles. And that was for to attack the planes with. That was to attack the planes with your Lowe's guns and your rifles. They would dive down the beam of the searchlight and you would deal with them as they came down with your Lowe's gun. This was the talk. This was how it was going to be. But anyway, we did actually get to couverture in 1938 with searchlights.